is Health Frontiers, and I'm Lexi Ross. My guest tonight is Ingrid Naaman, who is recognized nationally in holistic circles. She calls herself a holistic philosopher and counselor. I know that she's been honored by several universities and has authored a number of books. And I've never had the pleasure of meeting Ingrid, although I've heard about her for years. And I'm just very happy to welcome you this evening.
Thank you so much, Lexi. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we were going to talk about mold this evening, and gosh, that's a topic that's very broad and I think really misunderstood. People have no idea how much mold is in their homes and in their environment, and I wondered if you could tell us how you got interested in mold in the first place.
Two different ways, but first of all, I became the victim of it myself. I had a flood in a brand new house that I purchased 5 years ago, and I was totally ignorant of mold, and I happened to be extremely allergic to mushrooms, so it was a horrendous ordeal. My hair turned white. I just went into shock, practically.
Wow.
And I had no idea what mold really is, nor that it constitutes 25% of the biomass of the planet. And I got so interested in this, I became a certified mold professional. But let me just start at the beginning, because that's where other people also probably have to start. And the first thing about mold is that it's opportunistic, and all it needs in order to become activated is moisture for 24 hours. 24 hours. So you can have a dripping faucet or a little puddle on your floor, and this is enough if the conditions are warm enough and so forth that the mold can become active. And because its mission is to decompose, digest everything, so to speak, and bring it back to, or reduce it to, simpler elements, like we all return to dust. Is that our ultimate destiny? I don't know, but I think that from a physiological perspective, that's exactly what mold does. It breaks things down through a process of digestion. So it puts out something called a hypha, and it actually protrudes something microscopic that's like a straw, except unlike a straw, it has enzymes and acids in it, because the mold itself doesn't have a digestive system. So all of the nutrients that are going to feed the mold spore have to travel through this hypha, where they're decomposed through a very intense process that resembles our digestive process of being exposed to caustic acids and enzymes. And so what happens in a home is that the mold, once it becomes active, which is, it has, of course, in New Orleans, the reports are just hair-raising, it can spread these hypha as much as 2 miles from the original source. So the mold spore has become active, and now it's got its straws going down the street to the neighbor's sprinkler system or wherever. So making your house dry helps, but it doesn't necessarily prevent the growth of the spore if it's succeeded in putting this hypha so far down the street. And the next really interesting thing about mold is that it puts off a digestive gas. And so one of the byproducts of its consumption process is that it has this noxious odor, which is exactly as toxic as the material that the mold is feeding off. And it could be, in some cases, even more toxic. So let's say mold is only eating a tree or some dead leaves in your yard. It's probably not very dangerous. But when it starts eating the hugely toxic materials that are used in construction, like formaldehyde and carpet backing and things like this. It's really dangerous.
Well, let me ask you this. Once the house has been flooded, because I experienced that a year or so ago, I had a house that flooded, and we had people in to mitigate, you know, and they cleaned up the water, and they supposedly sprayed behind the walls and used fans and such, but that doesn't really get rid of it, does it?
Well, it depends how fast they were.
Uh-huh.
And what they used, and how quickly the materials dried out. For all intents and purposes, once sheetrock or something gets wet, it just needs to be thrown away. The same with carpet backing. And
what about wood paneling or that very thin sort of?
It really depends on whether it can be dried out. And the thing is that mold is part of everything in nature. The spores are there in the building materials because the building materials contain some organic substances. So they're just waiting for a chance to become active. And this would be like seeds in the desert waiting for rain. I mean, they'll sit there in the desert for 10 years, 70 years, until one day it rains, and then all of a sudden the desert has growth. And so these mold spores become active when there's moisture or the smell of ammonia. This is really interesting. And then I stumbled on this through a talk I was having with somebody who said, you know, I don't think moisture is the only issue, it's ammonia. And so what happens in the body, and I've actually seen this in my work with microscopy, is that the parasites, which are ubiquitous these days, may be producing ammonia as one of their byproducts, and then I've seen the mold actually attack the parasite. I've been able, through enormous magnification in the microscope, see the hypha just pierce right into several different places along the parasite's skin. This parasite, when it's enlarged, looks kind of like a snake.
Uh-huh.
And you might see these hypha just plunging right into the skin, like suckers.
What is the difference between a parasite and mold?
A parasite is basically a member of the animal kingdom. And recently, mold became a separate kingdom of fungi. Nobody was sure for I guess we could say centuries, whether mold was more like an animal or more like a plant.
Uh-huh.
So people who observe mushrooms and other types of fungi would look at it and say, well, you know, I think it's plant-like, but it doesn't have any chlorophyll, and it doesn't perform any useful service with sunlight and recycling carbon dioxide and so on. So, you know, maybe it's not really a plant, but it doesn't have a stomach, so it can't be an animal. So now it has been dignified by being called a separate kingdom of nature. There's even a book called The Fifth Kingdom.
Well, why would a fungus attack a parasite?
It wants to eat.
I think.
Yeah, it needs food. And so it feeds off of anything it can, and it's vicious. If you watch it in the blood, which is what happened to me, I'll tell you the story because I think it's extremely interesting to other people. I was told by a mold remediation specialist that he could smell this acrid odor of mold that was digesting and then putting out this noxious gas. And so we ran some formal tests, and then I asked if I could go to the laboratory and see what the technicians saw when they examined the samples that were taken in
the
house.
Now, wait a minute. This was in your house?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so there's a chain of custody to make sure that there's no tampering with the samples. And the person who runs the mold test certifies that you know, these have been in his possession since the time the samples were taken. He marks where he took each sample. And so I was just curious, and the technician happened to identify the mold as graphium. I've since been told that maybe it wasn't really graphium. It could have been aspergillus or even penicillium. But it looked like a nuclear bomb explosion in bright field microscopy. So it just like this long stem and then this big burst like a mushroom cloud. And I was just like, oh my, you know, I'm really living with a microscopic danger. And it just, it told me, you know, this is as dangerous as a nuclear bomb, only it's organic. And so it happened that my boyfriend and I were playing around with the microscope at my house. And we got used to sitting in the same place and observing different things. And then he died. And then one day I was sitting there just feeling his presence. Like, it's not as interesting to do this without Bob. And then I just heard his voice, loud as anything, go a little bit to the right. And I did, and there was this perfect match to what he and I had seen in the laboratory when we went there that day. And I thought,
where was it?
It's in my blood, and it's decomposing my blood. It's spraying some kind of mist that's probably an acid, and everything in sight just dematerialized. And I had two samples at that time, which is normal, at least two or three samples, so you have a control. And I watched it for hours, and everything on the one slide just completely vanished, and the other slide was just fine. Just
Wait a minute,
totally
I'm kidding.
Normal. But it ate everything, white blood cells, red blood cells, it ate everything. And I thought, oh my, no
Wait a minute,
wonder I'm... the people that are suffering from mold infection are so cold. They're trembling with cold. I had a patient that I was seeing in Germany, and she was staying at a hotel that was owned by the doctor there. And one morning she came in about 7, and she said she'd had a really bad night. And I said, why didn't you just knock on my door? And she said, I didn't want to wake you. But she sat on the bathroom floor wrapped in blankets and parkas and turning the electric heater all the way up and still just shivering cold.
I'm a little confused about what you were talking about with your blood samples on the dark field microscopy.
Mm-hmm.
What you said, you had two different blood samples, and one of them was clear and one of them was filled with fungus.
One of them had a single spore or a single mold. You know, growth.
Yeah. But were the samples taken at the same time or at different?
Yeah,
time?
Exactly. So I took my finger. One drop of blood on one slide, one drop of blood on the other slide, put a cover slip on top, and the one slide everything vanished, and the other had a totally normal experience for being out of the body, like it died after about 4 days.
Well, why would blood coming from your body at the same time have two different results? I don't understand.
There was mold in the one sample and not in the other, because let's say, I don't know, like you have millions of drops of blood in your body, and how many mold spores do I have? Maybe I had 100, maybe I had 1,000, maybe I had 1,000,000, but there simply wasn't one in the first sample taken, and there was in the second. And that's the same if you're sampling the house. You know, one of the things that they use for sampling your house is called a tape lift. They press a piece of tape. It can be anything from like a transparent address label to adhesive tape, and they just put it on different surfaces, particularly the most dusty surfaces, to see if there's anything there. And they'll get a lot of negative results, which doesn't mean that there's no mold. It means there was no mold in that spot. And they go an inch more to the right or 2 inches more to the right, and there's the mold.
Oh.
So it's totally consistent with what I experienced in sampling blood, is that you might find it in one sample and not in another.
That's very strange to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because it's not evenly distributed. It's just the same with parasites. You may see it in one sample and not in another.
Is that right? I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, because, I mean, you may be, I don't know, lucky or unlucky, but when you see one that's alive and moving, and you have a whole experience, like you visited this very strange zoo, and there are all these creatures you never knew existed.
Well, now, is Candida considered a parasite, right? Or
no, Candida is considered to be a yeast infection.
That's yeast. Well, how is it?
And yeast is a kind of fungus as well.
So that would be considered a mold?
No, technically yeast and mold are fungi, but yeast is not mold.
Okay.
So they're both fungi, but they're not exactly the same.
Well, I would love for you to explain how you were saying that yeast can be attracted to ammonia, right?
Well, I think...
And where would that be? I mean, would that be something that the body is producing?
Well, among other things, the parasites are producing. So the parasites are actually also feeding on your body and your body's tissues. And when I've watched them live in the microscope, they're actually very often eating red blood cells. Some of them gulp them, like they'll eat 30 at one time.
Good heavens.
Yeah, there's some parasites that can eat a quarter of a cup of blood per day.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, it's gross, but it's also fascinating, but it's gross. And there are a number of physicians in Russia that are telling that they've seen this in live blood analysis, they've seen it in other types of sampling of body fluids. It could be from blood or from urine or from stool or any other specimen, and that they're linking this with cancer and saying that some cancers are diagnosed as cancer when all in the world they are is a nest of parasites.
Yeah, that's the Hulda Clark theory.
It's one of her theories, but she's focused almost exclusively on this liver fluke, which is not microscopic. It's perfectly visible. But what I've seen, probably, I don't know, at this point, I would say probably I've seen 30 different types of parasites that are microscopic.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some of them may be related to Lyme disease, and some may be related to malaria. And I got so expert when I was seeing all these people in Europe that I was able to say, well, you know, you must have been to Sri Lanka. Well, how did you know? Well, the last time I saw this parasite, it was with someone who went to Sri Lanka. And the first... like really, really big one that I saw, the person had lived in
India?
In Kenya.
Oh, really?
And had been, it was the Pan American regional director for East Africa.
I see.
And he had a brain tumor, which we originally thought was related to his work in Chernobyl. And he was the last surviving member of the Pan Am team that went in to bring relief supplies to the people who were exposed to the radiation in Chernobyl. And so I asked if I could just see his wife's blood, and she had a look-alike parasite, which wasn't too comforting. And then this absolutely gorgeous Austrian lady came in, and she was a professional animal communicator. And I thought she could have picked up something from the animals, but this was a match for my Pan Am people. And she said, oh, yeah, I lived in Mombasa for 12 years.
I'll be there.
And then this elderly Swiss man came, and I said, you haven't been to Kenya. So he said, well, it was 30 years ago. And so I started buying parasitology books like they were going out of style. And I bought everything I could find on Amazon.com and every other website, and I found these parasites can live easily for 30 years, sometimes 50 years. So it explains the recurrence of symptoms of malaria, like people who come down with it constantly. But it's undiagnosed, and part of the reason it's undiagnosed is that the microscopy techniques that are used in normal laboratories and hospitals are unable to see what's in the plasma.
Right.
And so you need to look against a dark field in order
right.
to see the moving objects in the plasma.
Well, let's get back to your own personal experience and what happened with your mold
mm-hmm.
problems.
I was
you
very,
were talking
very
about,
ill.
You, pardon?
I was very, very, very ill.
What were your symptoms?
Itchy eyes, brain fog, disorientation, dizziness, unbelievable fatigue. And I would be just fine when I was out of the house for a few hours, and I'd come in the door, and I would just start, like, reeling. And it was like, I don't know if I have enough energy to go up the stairs and crash into my bed. And when I would stand at the top of the stairs, I would look down and say, I'm going to die at the bottom of the stairs. I know that my death is going to be from falling down these stairs because I'm too disoriented to hold on to the railing. So I used to go down backwards and hold both sides. And I started slurring. I had memory problems with the better I knew something, the harder it was to remember, like my best friend's name. And I mean, I knew it was my best friend, and I knew she had a name, and for the life of me, I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
And I started getting brown spots all over my skin, and then skin tags.
What are skin
and
tags?
My hair was turning white, and I gained a lot of weight.
What are skin tags?
Skin tags are just like little things that look like skin, but they hang from the skin like an obnoxious little growth.
Huh.
And when I would take herbs, they would regress. And I was about a year, a little more than a year after I moved into the house, I met a lady from Chile who used to own a chain of health food stores, and she told me about this Brazilian herb called Jatoba. And
how do you spell that?
J-A-T-O-B-A. And the fascinating thing about it, and this was really interesting to me because I was trying to write a book on adrenal exhaustion, but Jatoba does is it not only combats the mold, but it also helps with your stamina so that you feel like you have more energy to cope. So I went from having like 30 minutes a day of productive energy to suddenly having maybe 6 or 8 hours, which is an enormous improvement. I mean, enormous.
Was this as a tea or
just no, as an alcohol extract. It's very bitter, but I learned to love the taste.
Uh-huh.
And then, as fate would have it, I was with a patient from Russia who had been to all these university hospitals, and they just said, oh, you're hypochondriac. And so for 20 years, nobody could find what was wrong. And I found the mold right away. And I said, would you mind taking this, like, really heavy dose, like every half hour until bedtime? And then when she woke up in the morning, I asked her to take it every half hour again and then come back the next day. And what I saw is it broke the hypha. So that became even more interesting to me. How does this intense dosage of the herbs actually break the hypha? Once the hypha were broken, the white blood cells attacked and did what the white blood cells normally want to do. But as long as the hypha were, what can you say, structurally
active.
And normal,
yeah,
the white blood cells stayed away because it would be suicide for them to go near.
I'd like to give the call-in number in case there are any listeners who have any questions for you, Ingrid. Our number is 888-268-4313. Let me ask you this question. Why are parasites and mold so rampant today? I mean, it seems like even in areas of the country where there isn't necessarily a high moisture in the air, moisture content, mold seem to be just rampant.
Well, I don't know that it's anything new. There are some theories that the strange behavior behind the women who were the victims of misunderstanding during the Salem witch trials had eaten a fungus in rye bread or rye flour, and produced this kind of, I don't know, psychedelic type experience that wasn't understood by anyone at the time. But part of it is, I think there's been a change in construction materials and in how houses are constructed. We went from whatever most
natural
of us grew up with to these very energy efficient homes that don't breathe. And we also have a lot of water distribution within the houses so that there's potential for condensation, particularly on any kind of metal surface, which could be the pipes or it could be the window frames or, you know, there's just so many surfaces where there could be moisture condensation or leaking. In one of the cases that was brought up in the mold seminar was somebody whose wax ring on the toilet was not positioned correctly, and over half the house was destroyed because of that.
You're kidding.
Yeah, you know, leaky skylights, gutters that don't drain right, and so the water goes into the foundations. I went to one home, this was my patient who was shivering all night, and she had a kind of, it's not exactly a cellar, more like a downstairs pantry, but the long wall of where she kept all of her pears and things that she put up for the winter was the same wall that the snow would pile up against. And then in spring when the snow started melting, a lot of that moisture was brought in through the wall. And there was black mold like 3.5 feet high from the floor up to 3.5 feet. And she really didn't understand how dangerous it was. And I said, but this is threatening your life. And she said, the last person who lived in the house lived to be 92. And I said, yes, but you're ill. And you can't afford to be breathing this air. And she said the landlord would never fix it. Long and short, she died a couple of months after that conversation.
Wow. Well, what different kinds of molds are they? I mean, the one that we hear the most about is the black mold, but are there different kinds of molds that are equally as destructive?
Yeah, for sure. The different molds that are dangerous to health. And I take a position a little bit different from some very conservative medical doctors, and that there is no such thing as a mold that's safe, because the mold is consuming. So even if it isn't off-gassing something horrifically toxic, which is part of the problem with things like Aspergillus and Penicillium and Stachybotrys, the black mold. These molds are known to be really dangerous. There are countless others that nobody knows anything about. So we can't really say, well, they're dangerous or they're not dangerous. We don't know. All I know is that all of them have in common the fact that they have hypha and that the hypha pierce into something. So let's say, this is interesting. I have a little article on my website, moldmisery.com, about how blue cheese is made. And if you look at blue cheese, you see these little, I don't know what you call them, thread-like bluish-green lines.
Uh-huh.
These are the hypha. And the way that you make more blue cheese is you just stick a sharp object into the cheese and then dip it into the milk. So that's enough to infect this milk so that it will become blue cheese. That one thing. So next time you're peeling an orange or something and trying to cut off the mold, just remember that over and above this powdery green stuff on the surface of the orange peel, there are all these tentacles going down into the orange, which are just as dangerous as the spores themselves.
Yucky.
Yeah, really. So throw the whole thing away.
Honestly. Yeah, really.
Really. There are probably some molds that make things easier to digest,
like
because they have acids.
Like a
blue cheese is a soft cheese. As is a camembert and some of these other cheeses that have a lot of molds in them. But presumably they're not really, really dangerous, but they're always potentially allergenic. So anybody could have an allergic reaction literally to anything.
So
more likely to a toxic mold than to a non-toxic one, but they could be allergic to any mold.
Well, isn't that true of all cheeses? I mean, don't they all have mold to a certain degree?
All, I'm sorry, I missed one
cheeses.
Word. All seasons?
Cheeses.
Cheeses. I'm not sure that that is true. I think that that some of them have bacteria, but not mold.
I think it's important to talk about mold that gathers in ventilation systems in hospitals too. Isn't that often how the hypha travel through the ventilation system?
Well, mold again it's sort of like halfway between a plant and an animal, so it doesn't walk around. It more or less depends on something else to move it. So blowing air is a perfect way to disseminate it. And I've had a dreadful problem in my duct system in my house. I'm constantly changing the filters. I have two filters, one at the return and one in the furnace before air is recirculated. On a really bad time, I have to change those filters every 2 days. They're rated for a 90-day life expectancy, but that doesn't work in my house.
Wow.
And I don't even have air conditioning. But then when we went under the house into the crawl space, we found mushroom gardens and mold, all kinds of things. I mean, it was a whole world of strange life
forms. Fungal growth.
Yeah, salamanders, all.
Well, but tell me this. Why is black mold so much the one that seems to scare people the most?
Because of the toxicity of the, it's called a mycotoxin. The mold has this byproduct of its consumption process, and that byproduct is toxic.
I see.
And it would be toxic to basically anything that came in contact with it. So,
well, let's talk about how to keep our houses or our bodies free of these molds.
The most important thing in a home or a workspace is moisture. The space must be dry. And if anything has a history of having been wet, even if it was 10 or 20 years ago, all of the building materials that were saturated need to be disposed of. And they need to be disposed of using special environmental hygiene protocols, which involve sealing off the unaffected areas of the building and with very heavy plastic. And then the workmen have to wear these special Tyvek suits that are like space suits with masks, and it's pretty nasty work. Even if the mold isn't active, and even if it isn't black and it doesn't seem to be doing anything, the spores are there, and the minute somebody gets out his utility knife or saw and starts cutting, he could cause these spores to fly all over the place.
Well, how does one discern that if you can't see the mold, if it's not growing on the walls or whatever, on my house that I was in, it was growing on the walls. I literally had to clean the walls all the time. Mm-hmm. In one of my rooms. Is there a meter of some sort, or how do you discern that it's there?
Well, if you're sensitive to the smell, you would detect anything from musty odor like you might have on a shower curtain that needs a really good bath. That's not a good pun, but I mean, I take my shower curtains and wash them in wild oregano oil and cinnamon oil and a natural orange cleaner. And that kills all of that odor that kills the mildew and things that are producing that musty odor.
What about using Clorox? I saw on your website that that's not a good thing to use.
Well, what they said in this mold seminar I took is that Clorox irritates the mold so that it dies back, and then when it comes back, it grows stronger. And hydrogen peroxide seems to be all right.
Really?
But not Clorox.
Okay.
And there are lots of people who disagree. I think colloidal silver probably works pretty well too. And
Is that a good thing to take internally? The colloidal silver?
Yeah, I don't know how it works internally in terms of mold because I haven't had a chance to observe it. I'm looking for a research situation where I could sit down and study all these things in a nice, formal way. But I don't have that situation.
Have you heard anything about olive leaf? Because I've heard that olive leaf.
I've heard a lot about it, but I don't have a lot of experience with it. And because I have my own herbal product line, I tend to want to try the things that I've conjured up to see how they work. And what mold doesn't like is bitterness. What it thrives on is sweetness. And if you look at something like a beer making process, then the yeast that are used to start the beer making process consume all the sugar, and that determines your ultimate alcohol content. And so in the opposite taste, I studied Ayurveda, and the sweet taste would be bitter or pungent, and a tree like in the rainforest has to be able to defend itself against termites and mold and everything that would make the tree disintegrate from rot or insects. Otherwise, it's never going to grow into a big flourishing tree. So the bark is what protects the tree, and the bark is full of alkaloids that are intensely bitter. And so the herbs that seem to be effective in combating mold infections in the body are almost all made with bark, these bitter barks.
So that would be like maybe Podarco?
It probably is effective, again, wild oregano is supposedly very effective.
What about, I think you mentioned cinnamon, did you not?
Cinnamon.
Cinnamon is not really that bitter.
No, but it works through its pungency. It may be that the method of destruction is different from a bitter and a pungent herb or the taste that. But as a for instance, I'm a pacifist and I don't like to hurt anything, and I had these giant ants coming up through my floor registers, and I have a lady who cleans my house, and she said, well, I think I should talk to my husband about this because he would know how to take care of it. And I said, oh, just mix up some cloves and water, powdered cloves, and shake it and spray it around the top of the register. And she laughed, and she went home and told her husband, and he had a really good laugh. And then she came back a few days later. She says, my goodness, it worked. They won't cross a line. If they're ants or something that want to come in the house, I just put a line of cayenne or cinnamon or cloves down, and they won't cross. Mice won't cross nothing. They don't like it.
Interesting. Cinnamon? What is it? Cayenne, cinnamon, and what?
Or cloves. One or the other. I have the powder, and I'll just I'll put a line around. So, okay, here's my space, and you know you're welcome to live on this side of the line, but on not on this other side of the line. And so I just put the line down.
So do you use oregano in the body to get rid of fungus and mold?
I have used it, and I've also used it to wash my bedding. There was a study from the University of Manchester that every single pillow that they tested was full of aspergillus.
Right.
And I thought, oh my goodness, how many children's earaches and sore throats and everything might be due to the pillows.
Absolutely.
And so I immediately threw my pillows with their feathers and everything into the washing machine with wild oregano and this orange stuff. And
so in other words, if you're using, I mean, I wash my pillows occasionally, but I throw them in just regular detergent. So regular detergent wouldn't be effective against mold, is that right?
Probably not.
Yeah.
And this is interesting, and I think everybody should maybe think about it a little bit, that we went through a whole century of Pasteur-based medicine, Louis Pasteur, like pasteurization and germ theories and phobias of bacteria and viruses. But all of the antibiotics are made with molds. So if you think of the history when Fleming was studying Staphylococcus aureus, which is something that's on the skin, and causes infections, and so with wars and lots of injuries from bullets and things, that soldiers were not dying necessarily of their bullet wounds, but in complications of infections. And so he was studying Staphylococcus to see what he could do to control it, and then one day he noticed an area in a petri dish where everything was dying. And he cultured it and found out that that was penicillium. So penicillin came from this observation of how the mold kills the bacteria.
Yes.
And then the subsequent development of antibiotics were based on variations of the same idea. In other words, we could use a different mold and it might be effective against a different strain of bacteria.
Well,
but,
I've noticed that a lot of doctors don't even prescribe penicillin anymore. Is it because so many people develop allergies?
Well, the problem is that with the ingestion of antibiotics for every frivolous reason, including that we're getting secondary medication through
animal
consumption of meat products,
yeah.
The animals are fed enormous amounts of growth hormones and antibiotics. So we're all ingesting that if we're eating animal products. And so what we have is a potential for mold growth in our bodies because we've taken mold in the form of an antibiotic.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it completely changed the health of humans and domesticated animals.
So true.
Mm-hmm.
Scary, actually. I was saying to someone the other day, eating is a risky business these days.
Breathing is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if eating, breathing, I mean, all the things that we take, sleeping, all these things we take for granted may not necessarily be good for our health. And but back to the bedding, and the bedding really needs to be washed at least once a week. And it needs to be washed in something that's capable of getting all the dust mites and other creatures out of it, and not just the sheets and pillowcases, but the pillows and the blankets and the bed pad. And some people may even need to have a dust mite barrier under their sheets, over the mattress and under the sheets to protect them.
Don't you think most people change their linens at least once a week?
Probably most people do,
yeah.
But probably they don't necessarily wash the bed pad and the blankets and the pillow each time.
Well, even Oprah had a show. I don't get to see her very often, but I did happen to catch one show where they were talking about all the dust mites and things that gather in bedding, and they said you shouldn't use your pillow for more than, what, a year or two before you replace it. That you shouldn't have pillows on your beds that have been sitting there for 8 or 10 years because they're so toxic. And they did a whole show around that.
I see. So, well, that's great. She's one
wonderful.
Of the more savvy people on the planet.
Yes,
and,
she is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't really talked about a lot of the diseases that can come from mold. And people can actually die from mold. And I was wondering if you could give a couple examples of that.
Well, the very first one was the person to whom I dedicated my website, Helena Stevens, and she was a guest on the estate of a very wealthy patron. And I won't mention names or anything, but she was a kind of spiritual teacher. Her husband became ill, and then he started to get a little bit better, but she developed cancer of the tonsils, and she was really, really desperate. And long and the short, they pulled their headboard away and found that there was black mold behind the headboard. And she was diagnosed as having cancer, and her condition was treated as if it were a cancer. But the fact of the matter is she probably had a mold infection that was never understood by any of the practitioners that she saw. She was fairly committed to doing everything as holistically as possible.
Well, you
but
know,
she saw everyone, and she was very well networked, and she knew all the gifted healers and all the scientific specialists, and she saw everyone, and nobody turned her around. She died.
Well, you know, Otto Warburg, I don't know if you know who he is.
Yes, certainly.
Well, mm-hmm. He says cancer is nothing but fermentation of the cells.
Mm-hmm.
That's his theory, and I believe it.
Yeah, so it would suggest the yeast condition, which you can see. I think that sometimes we observe something and then we extrapolate it to say, well, all people must have this. But I think I'm more eclectic, and I would say I've seen some people whose cancers would seem to be parasitic in nature, some whose cancers would seem to be mold-related, some who might have a yeast infection rather than mold. One of the Russian doctors says that she has never seen a cancer where there wasn't trichomonas involved. That's normally considered to be a sexually transmitted parasite, but she was finding it in the blood of all of her patients.
Wow.
I've seen infections I think this epidemic of lymphoma due to the contamination of the polio vaccine with the simian virus 40, SIV 40 it's called, or SV 40. There are dozens of articles on the Lancet website about this contaminant. In laboratory tests, it invariably produces lymphoma in animals, but it was,
and it was
a contaminant in the polio vaccine.
No kidding.
I think what I'm saying is that some people are dealing with infections, or they're dealing with allergic reactions to mold, and they're run down by what they're having to contend with. And if you eliminate all of the aggravating factors, they might have a better chance of turning their big disease around.
Well, now, if you in fact find your way to somebody who does dark field microscopy, can they discern all of those variables, you know, like the parasites, the fungus, the all the things that would contribute to, say, being, you know, interpreted by a regular allopathic doctor as being, you know, lupus instead of an allergy or a fungus of some sort?
If you could find someone who was sufficiently well trained, which in the U.S. is almost impossible, and in the German-speaking world it would be very, very easy. I mean, thousands of people in Germany have been trained in this kind of microscopy.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I came across I guess I'd have to call it an invention recently that actually grew out of the research of Otto Warburg, and it's a machine called Energy Plus, and it's spelled AIRNERGY. And what it does is that you put it in your nose, and it emits a vapor that with an enzyme that enhances the way the body metabolizes oxygen. So that it's actually creating oxygen platelets in the bloodstream, which go directly to the mitochondria, igniting the ATP. Now, wouldn't you think that something of that nature, because it's a highly aerobic situation where it's oxygenating the body to a higher degree, don't you think that would kill fungus and parasites?
I'm not 100% sure, but what I am fairly certain about is that if, in addition to the oxygen, there's something else that's fungicidal or immune-enhancing or bactericidal or whatever that patient really needs, that they would probably respond very quickly, because there is an enormous amount of activity in the sinuses, because we do inhale toxic things, and the body is designed or has evolved to conquer as many of those exogenous threats as possible before they migrate into other parts of the body. So the nasal passages, the acids in the digestive system, all of these parts of our body are developed to fight off these pathogens. And so the sinuses are our first line of defense, you could say, and the tonsils and the lymph nodes in the throat, all of these areas, if they could be made to be more efficient, lots of people would have a better fighting chance. I'm not watching the time, but there are two things I wanted to bring up before
our
time runs.
We've got about five, maybe six or seven more minutes, so go ahead.
Well, I was thinking of your question earlier about what kinds of conditions that I've seen related to mold, and I gave you the worst case scenarios of two really lovely ladies who died. But there was a wonderful, well, sort of sad, but wonderful situation that I encountered in Switzerland. There's a little girl, 4 years old, who was told that she had cancer in both eyes, and they had removed the one eye, and they were waiting for her to recover from that operation so they could remove the other eye. And so I saw her between the first surgery and the scheduled second surgery. I found mold in her blood and addressed it immediately, and her second eye has been saved.
Wow.
And I mean, honestly, I mean, I just wish we'd, you know, I'd seen her sooner.
Oh,
and saved both eyes, but I get
I can't believe they removed
emails
her
from her mother every few weeks telling me how grateful she is, and her mother's going on to study medicine now, and so there can be really heartwarming experiences. There was another person in Switzerland also. I spent quite a bit of time there this year, who was a mental patient, and I asked her if she had ever seen mold in her home before she went kind of berserk. And she said, yes, it was behind a painting hanging over her bed. And we found it in her blood. And she was, like, her behavior was normal in 24 hours. 20 years of institutionalization.
Oh, my God.
And there was such a significant personality change in 24 hours that you could really see that this had nothing to do with her emotions or, well, you can't say nothing to do with some character defect in her emotions. It had to do with the havoc these chemicals were having on her internal stability.
Well, was it that she was just depressed, or did she have other personality disorders?
I missed one word. Did she have what?
I said, was it just that she was suffering depression, or were there other problems?
Oh, no, she was really bizarre and suicidal and violent. So she basically couldn't be allowed to move freely in the world.
Okay.
And I have no doubt whatsoever that she'll recover completely now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
so
and I think everyone has this potential for getting well. That's important. I mean, you may have a problem, then you have to face it, and if your house is infected, you have to deal with it. And it's hard work. I've spent 5 years, and I can't even tell you how much money trying to eliminate the problems in my house. But I'm also using it as a sort of study, cataloging everything I'm doing and trying to share the results so that other people don't have to go through what I went through.
So you have your own built-in laboratory.
Well, yeah, I have a microscope, and I'm taking dust samples, and I'm a careful observer, and I'm looking to see why the problem
occurred. Well, so I have a friend right now who has a very unusual case. She went in for a gallbladder operation, and while they were operating on her gallbladder, they cut her bile duct. And the poor woman laid in Emory University Hospital for 5 days with her telling the doctors and nurses that something was deplorably wrong and no one would believe her. And she finally found one nurse who would listen to her, and the nurse finally got the attention of the doctor, and they went back in to find that her bile duct had been cut. And her whole stomach was filled with bile, and they, of course, vacuumed it out, and then all of a sudden she started having all these, you know, foggy brain and pains in her brain, and she would call me and we discussed it, and I began to realize that she had developed some sort of parasites or fungus. So we started treating her with various things, and then she got on, like you, she started studying all kinds of parasites, and she's been treating herself, and now she's getting colonics, and she's doing a number of things. Would that jatoba herb be the best thing for her to try for the molds and flukes that she's probably developed?
Well, again, it's hard to know. I mean, it's two possibilities that jump into my mind. One is that she has an infection, and the other possibility is that parasites are running around everywhere, because bile is how the body would kill most of the parasites. Like if you have a parasitic infection, you give herbs that stimulate the production of bile, and then that horrible, horrible green substance is what actually kills the parasites. Maybe not the herbs themselves, but the herbs act as a catalyst for the body to produce more bile. So they've stirred up an area of the body that's usually riddled with parasites, and they've disrupted the mechanism that the body has for dealing with those parasites.
What a catastrophe.
It is. It really is. And if we only understood that absolutely everything that we were born with we need, you know, God designed us right, you could say.
That's right.
Safe to change anything.
I know.
No, you need to heal everything so that it works right again.
Well, Ingrid, I think we're about running out of time. Was there any last-minute thing you'd like to pass on to the listeners or about mold in general?
Well, I would just invite them to visit my website. It's a relatively new site, and I'm adding more material all the time. I haven't really developed the medical part of it as much as I intend to. I'm sort of tiptoeing my way in with...
Well, give us the name of your website.
Moldmisery.com.
But you also have another website.
I have 20 websites. I have kitchendoctor.com.
What about Sacred Energy Medicine?
No, that's not mine. Sacred Medicine. sacred-medicine.org, cancersalves.com.
Gosh, you really do.
I have 20 websites.
What's the best one for people to get to you?
Well, for mold misery. And,
okay.
And I think the website that people have the most fun visiting is Kitchen Doctor, because I'm using all of my knowledge to empower people to find solutions that are simple.
Okay, and you do actually have products that you sell on your website, don't you?
Yes, I sell other people's products as well as ones that I've created.
Listen, I just want to thank you so much for taking time to share this very important information, and I hope our listeners will take this seriously, because mold really is a serious problem. And Ingrid Naaman, I want to thank you for being on Health Frontiers.
Well, thank you, Lexi. It's been a lot of fun, and the time flew away.
No, it does. Good
okay.
night. And I hope we can talk to you again sometime.
My pleasure. Yes. Have a nice evening now.
You too.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year.
Mm-hmm.
This is Lexi Ross signing off for Health Frontiers.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.